We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
On the Cowboy Sports Network, from Learfield IMG College, welcome to the Oklahoma Genetics Summer Series, brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics, bringing OSU's world-class wheat varieties to the farmers of the plains. Now, here's the voice of the Cowboys, Dave Hunziker.
Welcome to a brand new creation here on the Cowboy Sports Network. Welcome to the Cowboys Summer Series, brought to you by our friends at Oklahoma Genetics, the marketing arm of Oklahoma State's world-class wheat breeding program. Well, in the summer, everyone's starved for Cowboys sports information. They're starved for games. Well, we're going to feed you here the next 4 weeks with some great interviews. You'll hear first today from Cowboy head basketball coach Mike Boynton. You'll also hear from Brandon Whedon, the former Cowboys star quarterback, and Cowboy football head coach Mike Gundy, and others. And all of this made possible by our good friends at Oklahoma Genetics. Oklahoma Genetics brings Oklahoma State's world-class wheat varieties to the farmers of the plains. And one of those big-name and big-producing varieties carries on an Oklahoma State legendary name. It's Gallagher. And Gallagher has been one of OSU's most planted wheat varieties since its creation. It's easy to understand why. Gallagher has superior fall forage production and grain yield. Its broad disease package is centered on leaf rust and stripe rust. Gallagher is also resistant to Hessian fly and offers above-average milling and baking quality that's been verified by the Wheat Quality Council. Gallagher is a descendant of Duster and is another of Oklahoma State University's Graze and Grain wheat varieties. To learn more about Gallagher and other Oklahoma State wheat varieties, log on to okgenetics.com. That's okgenetics.com. We will start our conversation with Cowboy head coach Mike Boynton in just a few moments. You'll also hear throughout these programs from Oklahoma State University's wheat breeder, Dr. Brett Carver. Stick around. Lots of good stuff coming your way on the first ever Cowboy Summer Series, brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics and Learfield IMG College. This is our Cowboy Radio Network Summer Series, brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics. And first up, Cowboy basketball coach Mike Boynton, who will be entering his third year coming up later this year in the fall. 2 years on the job, as you just think back on the experience collectively for you, what things come to mind?
A lot of learning, learning how to manage, obviously continue to be aggressive in recruiting, but learning there's some areas that we got to improve on in that area. Learning our players, our staff, our school, what's really important here and how we can continue to put ourselves in position to have success moving forward.
Anything surprise you as you think back as to what you may have expected when you took the job versus where you are now? Do you think back and say, boy, some of this is different than what I thought, or no?
You know, I would say I'll go back further to maybe a few years before I got the job and trying to process what it would be like when you first got a job. Now, obviously, there's some things that you know you got to do. You got to put together a really good staff. You got to recruit really good players. You want to be in a position where you have the resources necessary to have success. But then you fast forward to when the opportunity was presented to me. It happened so fast. I'm not sure I really thought much about what I had to do as much as I just hit the ground running and started to try to figure some things out along the way.
Do you think that maybe was a benefit when you think back on it? Because you didn't really have time to think outside of yourself, so you had to stick to who you are, whereas if you had time to stop and think about it, perhaps you may have overthought it. Do you think maybe, as crazy as that sounds, that may have been better because you kind of forced you to stick to who you were?
Sure. In some ways, I'm sure it was a benefit to me to not have to overthink things, to maybe just have to make decisions quickly. You know, some of them we didn't probably make the best way at the time. But I also am appreciative of the fact that we're able to learn and grow together. Our staff's been pretty intact the whole time here, and I'm excited about what's happening moving forward. When you first take over a job, there's so many things that you got to learn, and you got to learn them pretty quickly because every decision you make is the final decision. And that's what your staff and your team will try to go take to task. So I'm excited about where we are, what we've done in 2+ years so far, not necessarily in terms of wins and losses, but I feel like the program certainly got some really, really positive momentum right now.
So what's been more challenging, do you think? Trying to manage and get the staff where you need it to be, or managing the players and getting your roster and your culture the way it needs to be?
Probably the staff. And I've got really, really good people. Obviously, we've had some turnover in that regard. I really feel like at this point, we've got as strong from top to bottom of the staff as we've had. Got a lot of diversity in terms of talents and experience, but also guys that are hungry to continue to help us build a championship caliber program. And if you get the right staff, then everybody's on the same page. You can promote the message that you want. Our fans have been terrific. And then the players will follow. And then once you get the players in place, then the success happens.
You did make the staff changes, as you indicated. What drove some of those decisions? You touched on it briefly, but what was your thinking behind some of the things that you did?
Just trying to be better. You know, every year I look at how do I make this program more competitive? How do we put ourselves in position to compete for what we feel like is national prominence and a program that deserves it, a fan base that deserves it? And so we just had some holes we had to fill, and we weren't getting as much out of some of the pieces that we had. So we moved some things around, and now we got everyone, I believe, in the best position to provide the most that we can get out of them for that particular role in our program.
Of course, the first new coach you brought in was Eric Pastrada. Tell us about him, and as I understand it, you have a deep history with him.
Yeah, so Eric and I have known each other for about 6 years now. We worked together for 3 years at Stephen F., and obviously we had a lot of success working together and pretty complimented each other pretty well, know each other's strengths and weaknesses. So he can challenge me in ways that maybe some of the other guys on the staff aren't able to at this point because he knows me so well. But I can also trust that he knows exactly what we're looking for and how success in our system works because he's been through it with me.
When you think back about, again, these last 2 years and where you've turned to for help, who do you think has helped you the most in terms of offering you advice, guys you can bounce things off of even during the season or in the off season? Who's been able to help you the most?
I always reflect back to guys that I played for and then worked for. And obviously, I'm closer to no one in this business than I am to Mike Young, who's now the head coach at Virginia Tech. Really, really good friend, a good sounding board for me. Obviously, he's had a different experience in this profession. Getting his first Power 5 job after 30-plus years almost seems criminal for the amount of success he had at Wofford. But also Eddie Fogler and Dave Odom, guys that I played for in college. George Ravlin's a great mentor to me. But I've developed some good relationships with other coaches in our league who've been very, very helpful. Shaka Smart and Chris Beard are two guys that I talk to relatively regularly. Coach Kruger was a big supporter when I first started, and he's been a big help. So I think what would be surprising maybe to some of our fans is just the amount of respect amongst the coaches in our league and our willingness to, outside of competing against each other, helping each other have success.
I don't want you to say too much because you probably don't want to on this topic, but when you look at a guy like Chris Beard, who just finished as national runner-up at Texas Tech, and you mentioned some of the others, but for example, Chris Beard, when you look at what he's done to build that program, what gets your attention and what are maybe some things you would emulate from what he's done?
Yeah, you got to be careful not to try to copy too much of what someone else does, because, you know, one of the things I know is if you try to be someone else, the best you can be is the second best version of that person. So there are some things, however, that they've done culturally to establish an identity of a program. They have a collective toughness about them. They have a purpose behind everything they do. And so it's one of the things that I've kind of been able to talk to him about is how do you continue to feed that monster that now is expected to have success. And, you know, he just keeps it simple. You know, he goes back to his roots and Coach Knight mentoring him and teaching him how you build a program and never relenting on the things that you really firmly believe in. Now, you make adjustments on a scheme from game to game or year to year, but you have to have an identity, something that you can hang your hat on. And in our program, we feel like it's got to be toughness and unselfishness and some discipline. And so we'll continue to put those things in place. And, you know, that'll be a hallmark of our program for years to come.
You were one of the youngest coaches in a Power 5, obviously, when you took the job. And now you're 37 years old. And by Power 5 standards, even Division I standards, that's young. But we live in the world of the millennial. Do you feel like, as opposed to maybe previous generations, there could be an advantage by being younger? Because I guess all old people like me say, well, it's a different generation nowadays, but there seems to be a pretty drastic change in the culture among young people. Do you think maybe being younger is a bigger advantage than maybe it was 20 years ago for a major college coach?
Yeah, I think part of it is what's acceptable now is probably a little bit different than what was once acceptable, and having the ability to connect. You know, my coaches didn't have to connect with me. They just told me what to do.
Understood.
I mean, and, you know, I respected that, and that's the way things were done then. And I'm not saying that you don't just, you know, give instruction and kind of establish who you want your program to be and how you want things to go. But there is a delicate balance between making sure that kids understand clearly what the expectations are and B, understanding clearly that this isn't personal. We do care about you as a person. There are some things that we expect from you from a physical standpoint, from a commitment level, that maybe I can get across to a kid a little bit better than maybe guys who coached 25 years ago that didn't have to worry about those things, because you just, again, you know, if my coach told me to do something, I just did it. And if it worked, I was thankful that I did it his way. If it didn't, it was my fault.
We'll have more with Coach Boynton in just a bit, but slipping in now is Dr. Brett Carver, who's Oklahoma State University's wheat breeder and obviously the key man as far as Oklahoma State's world-known wheat varieties are concerned. There's been a lot of growth in this area in terms of wheat breeding, creating new varieties, but what has sort of led to that acceleration in terms of the number of varieties being put out there?
Well, first of all, wheat is a very complicated plant. It's a big plant in genetic terms. Yeah, when you look at the gene number in wheat, it's like 150,000 genes being expressed, maybe as many as 200,000. Compare that to the human genome, there's 50,000. So it's a complicated beast, and so it's a big, huge numbers game, plant breeding and wheat breeding in particular. And so if it's a numbers game, that means you're playing probabilities. So to play the probabilities right, you have to take more chances. And to take more chances, you need more attempts in the field to identify the best combination of genes. And you know, we learned that 20 years ago, that if we're really going to be good at this, we better take more chances. We have to grow the program. So right now, this program is running full throttle. I don't know that it can get much bigger based on the human resources we have, but you know, we were releasing about one variety every 3 years 20 years ago. Now it's triple that. We can release three in 1 year.
So with that thought in mind, it's not like you really have a two deep. It's more like you have more positions, so to speak. Varieties that will suit different needs is what it sounds like.
That's a very good point, because I mean, we love to always have that home run hitter. You know, hit something that can cover a wide production area in the Great Plains. But we're sort of migrating towards, let's try to solve this problem in this part of our state, or over here in another different problem in another part of our state. And that's what I think the universities can do so well anyway. We can focus on problems that exist, but not in large acreages. This program is tailored to do that, and thanks to the support we have.
That's Dr. Brett Carver, Oklahoma State University's wheat breeder. More coming up with Coach Boynton on the Cowboys Summer Series from Learfield IMG College. Continuing on the Cowboys Summer Series with Oklahoma State head men's basketball coach Mike Boynton. Of course, the Summer Series brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics. It's been a good summer for Isaac Likely with Team USA under 19 national squad. What do you think about him? Helped him have success not only in making the team, but now he's faring well in these games.
Big part of it is he's been true to himself. And it's something that we talked about when this process first started for him and he was invited to the trials. It was very clear, you know, you were invited for a reason. Someone sees something in you now that they value and think can maybe help that team if you make it. And so I didn't want him to get caught up in trying to go out there and prove something to someone that he hasn't already established as a strength of his. So I was very clear. Hey, you go out there and you play basketball the way you've played and you play with a great joy and you play unselfishly and you play to win and you let the rest of the stuff take care of itself. But don't go from being a 20% plus 3-point shooter to then being a guy who's out there trying to take 6 or 7 threes in a scrimmage to prove that you've gotten better at it. And it's something that he has improved, but I think him being true to himself and continuing to play in attack mode and letting his defense dictate a lot of his offense has really helped him.
What else do you think they saw? You made the comment that you said to him, they saw something they liked. You mentioned his defense. What else do you think that they saw that they liked and has translated so well?
I think just competitively, he's at a really high level. He accepts all challenges. You know, he was thrown into the starting point guard position in the Big 12 as a freshman, and you know he found some struggles, but he also found some success. And I think that's a characteristic of someone who just can fight and find a way in any circumstance. And so I think he got out there and he was put in a competitive environment. And usually, guys like that rise to the occasion, even if it's against people who are perceived to be more talented than he is.
What are the not-so-obvious benefits to a player like Isaac Likely having that experience? There are obvious ones, playing more games, playing against different competition, but what are maybe some things that aren't so obvious?
I think what we'll see, and I've seen this before, he'll come back to Stillwater with a different confidence about himself. He would have been on a stage with the best players his age in the entire world. And that says something. Obviously, playing with a lot of great players in the U.S., but also competing on a world stage against some of the best people across the globe is something that he'll come back and he'll feel like, well, I belong in that conversation. And maybe, you know, the chip on his shoulder when maybe he doesn't make the all-freshman team, like maybe we thought he deserved some recognition for, is something he can still feel validated in that he was able to go out and prove it on the floor that he is one of the best guys.
Thomas DeZagua and Cameron McGriff had surgeries after the season was over. How have they recovered?
They've been great. They both stayed here throughout May when most of our team went home for a few weeks and did a lot of rehab, helped each other through that. And now, you know, that we're in summer school, they've both been, you know, strong leaders for us, not only from a physical standpoint, but from a mental standpoint, helping this group of young kids, our freshmen, learn what it looks like to work, learn the energy that it takes every single day to try to make yourself better. Even after the first week wears off where it's new and exciting, week 4 and week 5, just getting through the grind of the summer with not a whole lot of people around, but continue to understand that this is the time where you improve. And the season will largely show what we did this summer.
What exactly were the issues they were dealing with?
Well, Dizzy had a wrist issue that was just kind of nagging and probably – you know, in a normal circumstance, if you got a little bit more depth, you don't play him quite as much as we did last year. But he was a warrior for us. And then Cam had a lower back issue that just needed some time off and some rehab.
The influence or the impact of guys playing as much as they did with those injuries, as you said, I'm guessing that can't be understated.
No, I mean, it made me really proud to have been a part of that team, even though we struggled from a winning standpoint. But to see those kids fight and understand that long term, what they went through last year will prepare them for things that they can't even imagine are going to come up in their lives later on. It's something I'm going to be proud to have been a part and continue to preach the message of positivity and hard work and overcoming some adversity. And I think next year's team will, you know, be a beneficiary of what last year's team went through.
It's interesting. I think anyone who follows this team closely knew that potentially year one for you and year two could be bumpy because you dealt with a one-year coaching situation with Coach Underwood. You had a unique set of circumstances at the end of the Travis Ford era, so the roster could be a problem. You got through year one, great. Should have been in the NCAA tournament. Last year, you dealt with a lot of issues and managed to get through that about as well as you could and could have easily had a much better record. That leads me to this question. Do you feel like now you've got the roster where you want it to be moving forward and you're now transitioning out of that time that really everybody knew was coming?
I'll say this. I feel like we have the pieces in place that we need right now. My job is always to evaluate how to improve our roster. And so I always want to try to, you know, kind of navigate the waters to see if there's someone who can be a game changer for us, transcendent talent that could really take us over the top. But I feel good about where we are because of the makeup of our roster. I feel good that we've got five guys back who started pretty much every game for us last year, specifically as it relates to Big 12 play, and got a lot of experience. So they know what it takes. They also won't take it for granted that winning's easy. They know that they gave everything they had and we fell short a lot of times. So their message to the young guys will be, no, that's not good enough when we have those days where they're maybe not stepping up to the plate. But also for this group of seniors who've been through as much as any group I've ever been around throughout their careers, knowing that they want to finish their career and leave a legacy here that's a very positive one, not just sentimental, but from a success standpoint. So I'm motivated to make sure that happens for them, but I'm sure that they're motivated to make sure it happens for themselves.
You've got all the guys here now, for the most part, as guys are here for summer workouts and early impressions are just that, early impressions. But what have you seen up to this point?
We've got a really competitive group, probably the most competitive group collectively that we've had in my time here, even my year as an assistant. These guys really love to play. I mean, it's something, the game means something to them. Representing Oklahoma State means something to them. And so I think that'll be reflected in their effort. In their attitudes every day and the joy that they play with from being able to step out on the historic Gallagher Arena floor to play for the Oklahoma State Cowboys.
I had the privilege of watching some of a workout last week, and the one thing that jumped out at me, my goodness, even your guys that aren't listed as tall on the roster, they're long. I mean, I know you've been working toward that, but speak to the significance of that, and also do you feel like from that standpoint you're getting closer to where you want to be? Because I looked out there and all I saw was some good basketball players and a whole bunch of length.
Yeah, it's by design, and we want to get longer. We want to continue to be dynamic in that regard and put ourselves in position where we can be very versatile on both ends of the court because our length will give us a chance to maybe switch a little bit more defensively and still stay safe to be able to contest shots without always having to pressure the ball. But also to be able to see passing lanes because of our size on the perimeter and block shots because of our size in the paint.
There's been a lot of talk about your signees, and with good reason, the ones that joined your program by signing back in the fall. I want to focus on a couple of more recent additions. And first, Jonathan Laurent, graduate transfer from UMass. What do you like about him?
Obviously, his experience is something that'll be valuable to us. Another guy to balance out that strong group of talented freshmen. A guy who's been through the wars and understands what the work is. He's obviously been able to shoot the ball really well, so that's something that jumps out at you. And the more guys that you have that can make shots, the more opportunities you're going to have success on the offensive end.
Very recently announced the addition of another freshman, Hede Rusink. Hopefully I've said that correctly. Dutch 6'10 forward. Reading about him, very intriguing player. What caught your attention about him, and how did you go about landing him given the lateness?
Well, we got some film on him early in the spring and kind of started to evaluate. And sometimes, you know, film on international kids are hard. You can't really get a gauge on the competition level. But his size jumped out at you, and then you watched how he played, the way he moved. Very mobile big man. So he'll be a guy who can disrupt because of his length and being able to switch in ball screens and things of that nature. He moves his feet well. But the thing that probably impressed me the most is when he came here to visit, he went through a workout, which we can do on official visits, and he shot the ball extremely well. And this is after eating almost a whole pie of pizza at Hideaway about 45 minutes prior. So I was like, man, if this kid can shoot on a full belly, I couldn't shoot when I was hungry. So I was very impressed with his ability to shoot the basketball, but also he's more athletic than you would think when you just kind of look at him. He moves well, so he can get up on the rim and rebound and also protect the rim a little bit for us.
Speaking of big guys, at the end of last year, on the defensive end totally, and even from a more growing perspective on the offensive end, Yorané took off. What's the next step for him?
Well, continuing to get stronger so that that offense can elevate itself even more. And we've seen that. He's got more confidence. He's moving around more weight in the weight room. And you can tell he feels more comfortable now than he did a year ago today. So I'm excited about his growth and development throughout this coming season. He's a guy who's really, really focused on trying to establish himself as a force in our league. He did it on the defensive end, but to really put it together and develop a little bit more offensively, we'll have to throw the ball into him, and I think he'll be ready to deliver for us.
He was not a super highly recruited kid, and then he becomes a dominating force. What did you and your staff see that maybe others did not?
Well, I mean, a kid that plays with that amount of joy, and I think our fans have seen that already, he loves to play the game. He really, really enjoys being out there and being part of a team. But he's got a unique skill in that he can block shots, and he feels like he can block any of them they can get close to. So he plays an aggressive brand on the defensive end. He learned to maybe not foul as much later in the year, which really, really helped him because he was on the court more. But then just seeing a kid who's gone through something in his life and having dealt with that adversity, and you can never tell by talking to him, and if you don't know him, he would never mention it to you. But, you know, to deal with his hand and how he never lets it affect him. In fact, sometimes he frustrates me because he uses his right hand, which has less fingers on it, more than I want sometimes. But, you know, we got to let him be who he is. And it's a great testament to the fact that you can overcome anything if you have the right mindset.
Is he as quick off his feet as any shot blocker you've seen?
He's the best shot blocker that I've ever been around. I grew up in New York City, not a ton of big guys that come through, and I played with a couple in college, but no one with a knack or aggressiveness that I've seen with him. But the thing he's got to understand is he's going to be a marked man. People are going to try to use that against him this year, and he's got to make the adjustment. And so, you know, it'll be a nice chess match to see how he adjusts as other teams adjust to him going into next season.
More with Coach Boynton coming up in just a bit, but in the meantime, a word from our sponsor, Oklahoma Genetics. If you're facing a tough receiver on the opposing team, you might double-team him, bring a safety over to help. Well, that could be said about one of Oklahoma State's wheat varieties, Double Stop CL Plus. It's a two-gene Clearfield variety, and it's one of the best in the Central Plains. Double Stop CL Plus is an OSU Graze and Grain and Golden Grain wheat variety. Double Stop CL Plus is widely preferred by millers. It tunes out rye and other tough weedy grasses. And Double Stop CL Plus combines high yield, test weight, resilience, and show wheat quality in one variety. Double Stop CL Plus offers a competitive canopy, is acid soil tolerant, and stripe rust resistant. Double Stop CL Plus has also been affirmed by the Wheat Quality Council. To learn more about Double Stop CL Plus and other Oklahoma State award-winning wheat varieties, log on to okgenetics.com. That's okgenetics.com. Back with more with Oklahoma State head coach Mike Boynton on the Cowboys Summer Series brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics and Learfield IMG College. We continue with Coach Boynton. It's the Cowboys Summer Series brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics. A great time to talk Cowboy basketball. And, of course, July recruiting is about to ramp up, and so he'll be on the road with his staff recruiting and finding future Cowboys. As we glimpse toward next year, rule changes in college basketball, and the first that comes to mind, the move of the three-point shot from 20 feet 9 inches to 22 feet 1 3/4. What are your thoughts on that?
I like it. I like the change. I like anything that gives us a chance to grow our game and make our game more attractive to fans and more exciting for players to want to play. It's been a strength of ours, the three-point shot. We feel like we've got some really, really quality three-point shooters, and so we look forward to implementing a new line. I'm not sure if Thomas Izagua or Lindy Waters will even notice. They don't shoot very many of them very close to the line anyway. So the adjustment will be more for our younger guys who already had to make an adjustment from the high school line. But it's another inch or so. It's not like they moved it back 4 inches. I don't think it'll be that big a deal.
Yeah, I was going to ask, you know, people say, well, it's a foot and a half. It's not that big of a deal. We had the experimental three-point line 2 years ago in the NIT. You don't see it impacting shooting all that much or no?
No, I think it'll impact driving more so than anything, to be honest. Teams will have more space on the floor to make plays, and I think it maybe causes guys to maybe try to throw the ball inside a little bit more with better space, and they can play inside out a little bit stronger.
Going to ask, one thing it would seem to lend itself to is more back-to-the-basket post players, which are, you know, such a dying breed right now, but that may become a necessity, huh?
Yeah, we've been able to evaluate in some of our workouts this summer by just the way you can space the floor with another foot gives you a chance to, you know, get more attacks on the inside and throw the ball inside without too much help happening. Because, again, if you got, you know, Thomas Izagua and Lindy Waters on there, you want to try to double team, good luck to you.
Yeah, no question about that. As far as defensively, the up-the-line defense that you like to play, do you think it will matter a whole lot to how you approach that, or will you need some games to kind of get some data and evidence? What do you think?
Yeah, I think we'll probably have to take, you know, wait-and-see approach to that, because we'll see how other teams adjust offensively and how they want to play. But one of the things that will help us is by having more length across the board. We don't necessarily have to be as far up the floor, but we can cover the same amount of ground by having longer guys who can cover more space just by putting their arms out.
You know, the one thing about last year, even though wins and losses didn't work out the way you would have hoped, the one thing that jumped out to me was the impact of length, not only defensively, but offensively being able to shoot over guys. I don't know, and, you know, I probably should have figured this out a long time ago, but even though you didn't, wins, loss-wise, have the season you would have hoped, to me it became very obvious where you're headed from that perspective and what it means.
Yeah, it's our desire to be, you know, when they talk about length, be one of the teams that comes to mind, not just, you know, team, like a team in our league like Baylor or like Syracuse who plays a 2-3 zone and uses it that way. But Oklahoma State wants to come to mind because of our versatility and having dynamic players across the board who can help each other have success on the offensive end. So I'm really excited about where we're going. Recruiting's continuing to be a strength of ours. And obviously that's something that we have to be mindful of when we recruit, is making sure that the pieces complement each other.
What's your selling point when you recruit? How do you sell Oklahoma State and your brand?
Well, I say first and foremost, it's a program where you can do anything. There's nothing that a young man could desire to do that can't be done here at Oklahoma State. It's all been done here before. It's just a matter of getting the pieces in place and making sure the resources are provided so that they can do that. Obviously, you can get a great education here and be around a tremendous basketball program, be around a staff that truly cares about them as people and wants to make them better, each individual. But you can also get to the NBA, which is a great desire of most of those guys. We've had a ton of guys be able to go do that. We've had guys have to do it after 4 years. We've had guys have to do it after 2 years. And so you can come here and achieve that goal as well. But you can also win at a very high level. It's a program that's been first ever back-to-back national championship program, been to several Final Fours, been to several Sweet 16s. And again, it's just about getting to a place where we're consistently successful again. I think the struggle we've had in the last decade or so is the success has been very spotty. And with a lot of coaching turnover, sometimes that happens. So I think now we've got some stability within our staff. We've got some continuity with our players and continue to recruit the way we do. What's going to happen first is our fans are going to be back in the building and give us that extra boost of energy so that we're winning all of our home games. That's got to be a staple of a great program. And then we'll be tough enough that we can go on the road and steal a few. And our fans will be traveling to some of those too. So I'm excited about our fans coming back in the building and being excited about basketball. And I look forward to seeing the day where it all comes together and we're celebrating with a parade or bringing out a banner in Gallagher one day.
So what would you say to the fans right now?
I say get on board. I mean, the time is now. I mean, there's no need to wait. And I know everybody's excited about the future and what these young guys can become. Thomas Izagua, Cam McGriff, and Lenny Waters have put their heart and soul into this program for 3 years and deserve all the support possible in their senior season so that they can leave that legacy that we talked about earlier of the guys who stuck through some really tough times with our program and helped initiate a turn that we should not have to look back from. But we need our fans here. We need them here every night. I know travel's sometimes hard on the weeknights for our fans in Oklahoma City or Tulsa. I say, you know, anything worth having is worth sacrificing a little bit for. So, you know, come on. If someone needs to stay overnight, I can provide maybe an extra bed in my house if necessary. My wife's going to be okay with that, but she wants our building to be packed. You know, there's nothing like Gallagher Ivan when there's 13,611 people in there.
And that's part of the culture, the fans, the enthusiasm for basketball here, which has been a part of the history because it's been successful. Obviously, a part of recruiting is a player has to feel like, hey, I need to fit in. There needs to be a cultural aspect of it. What's that look like from your perspective, and what are the important elements outside of the obvious you can get anywhere from here? From a culture standpoint, the day-to-day, what's that need to look like as far as you selling this?
Well, first thing, and I tell kids and their parents this all the time, you're a person first here. And then once you're a person, we have to figure out what this person wants and what they desire to have. And we're going to treat you like a human being. We're going to treat you with respect, but we're going to push you. We're going to make you work really hard day to day. We're going to push you to limits that you probably think are harder to do than we think, but they're doable. But we're also going to love on you. We're going to treat you no different than I treat my own biological children or Coach Cooper's children or Coach Sutton's children. You're going to be part of a family. And a family that extends beyond the walls of our offices. It extends throughout our athletic department and across our campus and then to this community. And so what I want them to understand is they're going to leave one family and join another, and they're going to become a part of another family that extends across, obviously, the state of Oklahoma, but throughout the country.
So what do parents say to you? Parents, coaches, those who are influential and important in these young people's lives, those who come here, what do you hear back from them as far as their comfort with you?
Well, the feedback has been really good. When we've had a chance to really sit down with people and talk to them about what our program is about, the things that really matter, the four pillars of our program being respect, appreciation, accountability, and discipline, that always resonates with parents who really get it. Sometimes there are some unrealistic parents, and you know, it's okay. Our program isn't for everyone. So we have to establish that the two parties are kind of in the same page about core values. Once that's established, we've gotten tremendous feedback, and a lot of parents, you know, desire for their kids to be here, sometimes even more than the kids desire for themselves to be here, because they understand that these things are translational into life, that when they leave here, they'll be prepared to be, you know, positive influences in their community. They'll be prepared to know what a father looks like because they see me around my children, what a husband looks like because they see how I respect and value my wife. But they also see how you treat people and how people can help each other through some tough times, but also how we can celebrate each other's successes.
We'll have more with Coach Boynton in just a bit, but now joined once again by Dr. Brett Carver, Oklahoma State University's wheat breeder. And you're the leader of the pack, so to speak, as far as the wheat improvement team goes. But this is a collaborative effort. I've had the chance to go to some of the field days, many of them over the years. You come to understand just how many people are involved and a lot of different areas of expertise to make this work.
Oh, yes. And that's one of the things I like about this or love about this job is the people I can work with. The people I work with, we call ourselves the OSU Wheat Improvement Team. I think it's one of a kind research team that exists across the country. We really work closely together. We work together to go out and find money to help support us. We learn how to share that money, and we get the job done with the money. So it's about 10 scientists. And, you know, we'd love to have 20. We don't have a very deep bench, but I can tell you the people we have on the bench that are serving this project, they do it very well, and they have a skill set that is unusual and highly experienced. Let me just give you an example. Our entomologist, the bug guy, you know, our pathologist, the disease guy, myself, that's over a century of experience right there, and you just can't replace that tomorrow. It takes time to do that, and we're very, very lucky to have that kind of skill set. Our molecular geneticists, the ones who really help us in the DNA lab, you know, do that kind of work. Heck, they were wheat breeders in China before they came here to form this career. So they have 20 to 30 years under their belts. So I'm just extremely thankful for what they bring to this team. I wouldn't trade this team for anybody.
So what's how's the team work together? Give us an example of how the team works together.
Well, just a recent example is, you know, I asked our entomologist, you know, we have to have resistance to this certain insect that's really causing problems all across the world. It also it not only affects the way the plant grows, but it transmits the disease, one of the most common diseases in wheat globally. And there was no concerted effort to do that. I couldn't do it. I needed an entomologist to do it. I gave him the materials. I said, "Okay, can you apply your knowledge and find resistance to this insect that nobody else has found?" And by golly, he did. And so we are now bringing that, what we call germplasm, that raw genetic material, into the program. We're refining it. And I think we're going to have a commercial product within 3 to 5 years.
This is the Cowboy Summer Series brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics. And you've just heard once again from Dr. Brett Carver, Oklahoma State University's wheat breeder, OSU's world-class wheat breeding program, leading the pack in wheat research and development. More to come. This is the Cowboy Summer Series brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics and Learfield IMG College. We continue with Cowboy head coach Mike Boynton on the Summer Series brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics. The non-conference schedule, we obviously know what that looks like. Your thoughts on the non-conference schedule, maybe how it compares to what you dealt with last year, which was really hard.
Yeah, so, you know, I didn't know this at the time, but I reflected after the season and looked up the numbers, and overall strength of schedule was 4 in the country. Not quite necessary, obviously, considering that we play in the number one basketball conference in the country. It's been that way for 6 years. I always want to play really good people, but I also want to give our teams a chance to grow through some success early. So we'll continue to play really quality opponents. We'll try to get a quality opponent in Gallagher, you know, once or twice during the non-conference every year. We'll obviously go play in an exempt tournament every year. This year, we go up to the preseason in IT at the Barclays Center. We also return a game to Houston, who will be another quality team from the American. We'll play Wichita State at home. We got 2 other games as a part of the NIT, and we have to return the game to Charleston. So I think our schedule is going to give us some really good balance. But the most important thing in my mind from a scheduling standpoint is that your schedule in the non-conference prepares you for what you're going to see conference play. So we have some versatility. We'll see teams play different styles. We'll play in different environments and different buildings. And so hopefully once January comes, our team will have seen everything that they're going to see for the next 2.5 months, which is the biggest grind and hardest 18 games that we'll play all year. So the non-conference schedule, although challenging, may not have the same resonating number, but it doesn't necessarily have to for our team to achieve the success it does.
Any word on who you'll play in the preseason NIT in New York or not yet?
Haven't yet. There's some rumblings, but I don't want to speculate and send out any false signals. So we'll wait until they tell us. We'll be coming to Gallagher for 2 games in early November, and we'll go from there.
And as far as the Big 12 SEC Challenge, that's still to be determined.
Yeah, the Big 12 SEC Challenge is to be determined. They had to figure out which teams from the SEC weren't going to be participating first. We did get our matchup with the Big East, which is a new challenge this year. We'll play Georgetown at home, which is another quality team here on our home floor. And we'll get a game in Tulsa for our great fans over in Tulsa, Oklahoma, against Minnesota. Team was in the NCAA tournament last year and probably going to be projected to get back again this season.
Minnesota right before Christmas, December 21st, as a matter of fact, over in Tulsa. And now you've got the SEC Challenge. Now the Big East Challenge, those are built into your non-conference schedule. Do you like that, or would you prefer more flexibility with a couple of games?
No, I like it. It's good for us. The way it's set up, we should get one of those teams at home every year. So, again, we got a built-in quality opponent every season that our fans can look forward to coming to a game we're going to play against another Power 5 team. And so I'm excited about the opportunity also to play against a conference that I grew up watching. We actually played Georgetown in Maui my year as an assistant coach here. And so that was exciting because my dad grew up a Georgetown fan. Now, I can almost assure anybody listening out there, he will be cheering for the Cowboys when we play them on December 4th. But he's a big Patrick Ewing fan and obviously a big former great Nick. So I'm excited about that challenge. But yeah, it gives us a quality opponent every year at home.
You know, and I have to ask you, since it just happened, a team that will now be a part of that challenge that would not have been a month ago is Connecticut. returning to the Big East in a move that caught some by surprise. Of course, they have to figure out what they're going to do with football, but now they're in the equation.
Yeah, luckily I don't have to think about how it affects football, but I'm excited about it's good for college basketball. UConn is a Big East basketball program. In some ways, people would argue Syracuse probably is the same, but they're probably in the league where they feel that they still have high-level respectability. And so UConn being back in the Big East is good for them. It's good for the Big East, but I think it's good for college basketball overall as well.
What's the rest of the summer look like for you?
Recruiting. Recruiting is 365-day-a-year job, something we do ad nauseum and never take our foot off the gas pedal, always trying to figure out, again, how we can make our program better. So I'll hit the road here next week, go scour out some talent for the 2020 class where, we got a little bit of momentum there right now. But so we're excited about how we can finish that up, but then peering ahead to the following class as well.
Sounds good. Coach Boynton, we appreciate the extended visit. Great to catch up and have a summer chat, and we're looking forward to the year. Very much looking forward to the year. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Go Pokes.
Back on the Cowboys Summer Series, and here's a word about another of OSU's outstanding wheat varieties, Smith's Gold, named after OSU legend John Smith. Smith's Gold is an OSU product developed out of the legendary Gallagher variety that's sure to pin down many challenges that wheat farmers face. First, Smith's Gold offers better canopy hygiene, a later pull-off, and even better baking quality, as affirmed by the Wheat Quality Council. Smith's Gold also provides Hessian fly and green bug resistance and has improved resistance to stripe rust throughout the growing season. It also provides desirable flavor in whole wheat products. Smith's Gold, another in OSU's Graze and Grain and Golden Grain wheat varieties. And you can learn more about Smith's Gold and other outstanding OSU wheat varieties by logging on to okgenetics.com. That's okgenetics.com. Next week, in the second of our four Cowboy Summer Series programs, we'll sit down with Cowboy head football coach Mike Gundy and get his July thoughts on the start of Cowboy football training camp and the upcoming 2019 football season. The week after that, coming up the weekend of July 27th, an extended conversation with former Cowboy quarterback Brandon Weeden. Four of these Cowboy Summer Series programs coming your way here on the Cowboy Sports Network during the month of July and into August. For all of us here at the Cowboy Sports Network and our friends at Oklahoma Genetics, I'm Dave Hunziker. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week on the Cowboy Summer Series, brought to you by OGI and Learfield IMG College.
On the Cowboy Sports Network, from Learfield IMG College, this has been the Oklahoma Genetics Summer Series, brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics, bringing OSU's world-class wheat varieties to the farmers of the plains. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Cowboy Sports Network.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on Auto Trader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.